Collection DX Podcast.
And we're on. So, this is Josh B. and...
Josh F.
And
we're the J and J.
Yeah. And we decided we're killing time waiting for a video to process, and we're going to podcast. We're
making robot porn. Hardcore
stuff. Porn like nobody's business.
With soundtracks and dancing girls.
You know, the only thing it doesn't have is a money shot.
Well, you know, we can work that out.
I'll go get the hot glue gun.
Nice. So, here's my question.
All right.
All the years that I've known you, and how long have we known each other?
You know what? I'd say almost... It might almost be close to 10 now. Not quite 10 years.
Not quite, because I went to Japan in 2002.
Yeah.
But we met each other before that.
Right, yeah. I'd say maybe 8 years?
Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm getting old. We're drinking these really great, hardcore Mike's Hard Lemonade girly drinks.
Yeah. Only mine does not have a twisty straw like Josh's.
I needed social lubrication for this podcast because I'm feeling a little pressure.
It's some pressure.
So, okay, back to my question.
Nobody else is here but us.
I know.
And toys.
Yeah.
Lots of fucking toys. Oh, and a disclaimer, yeah, we're probably going to swear like sailors during this, which is something that we don't normally do on the site, so...
But this totally does reflect.
Yeah, this is how we really are for the most part. This does reflect our opinion.
Yeah.
And there are no lies here.
Yeah.
It's
the truth. It's pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. What's up with your love of Ray Dean?
Shit.
I know, I'm getting all, like...
You just went right to the
heavy. I went right to the money shot, like, pretty quick.
Ray Dean. Well... I remember when I was a youngin' and had to be maybe 78, 77, 78, somewhere in that area.
A classic year.
Yeah, so I was like, what, four or five.
How old are you, 35?
35, yeah.
Okay.
So I remember having, one of my first comics I ever had was a Shogun Warrior comic.
Was it number one?
You know, I don't remember which issue it was. What issue was right now? But it was the one they were in like a lava, a base underneath a volcano, with lava in it, and that because the cover was gone.
Okay,
I think I lost it early, but I'm sure I have the issue. I just don't know the number. Yeah, I'm some kind of nerd. I don't remember the issue. And you know the Shogun Warriors comic was Combattler, Dangard, and Ray Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The non-Toei stuff.
No. There wasn't Guy King in there at all.
No.
It sucked.
But the toy line had all the other ones.
Yeah.
So, it was that, and Force 5 was on TV. Was Force 5 on TV yet?
No, that was in 80.
Right, yeah. So, it was just the thing. And so, I remember just really digging the Ray Dean character in the comic book, you know? And... maybe it's when I was watching Battle of the Planets or Star Blazes. I might be getting my years mixed up. But, you know, the Mr. Biggs commercial, you know?
Yep.
I'm pretty sure my mom got me Ray Dean from Mr. Biggs.
The
Mattel Ray Dean. The jumbo.
Oh, okay. The jumbo.
And I got it, it had to be like 78 or 79, somewhere in that area where I got the jumbo for Christmas. And I was living... Let me see if I can place the year. I might not even been in first grade yet. I think it was 78, yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember it vividly that morning, I opened it up and I was jazzed and everything, and then my dad took one look at the shield fist and saw the big fucking point at the end. And the first thing he did was he took a pair of toenail clippers and clipped the end off the bow. I mean, the shield, because it was too sharp.
It's not C10 anymore, is it?
No, no, but I'm thinking, too, I mean, keep in mind, I'm like, what, four? I probably would do the same thing for my four-year-old if I got something that almost lethal, you know? But the fact that that weird memory imprinted in me, like, that was, like, the coolest thing ever. I got that, you know?
Well, you got to figure that was around the time that the Battlestar Galactica incident with the kid with the missile.
Yeah, it might have all been in all the you know, the
so
public eye.
78. Like, 78, 79 was that classic time where, like, you know, kids were supposedly shooting their eyes out with Red Ryder BB guns and, you know.
So I had that jumbo for a while, and I had some other Shogun Warriors, but most of the die-cast ones, you know, and just, like, the lame ones, the Poseidon, Rigor, but, like, the second version.
Whoa. With, like, the big flower missiles?
Yeah, I think so. It didn't have the bendy legs. No, I think I might have had a regular missile, but it was a second version because the legs didn't bend, you know? And the same thing, my Poseidon, the treads didn't go down. But I think, but it was pre-safety missile.
All right, so that's second version. Yeah.
So I had those, whatever, you know, then I moved on to Star Wars stuff and blah, 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 went through adolescence. So, but I always dug and held on to that Raideen toy, the Jumbo. I just always had it, and I had peeled all the stickers off it. I painted it up again. I took the back, you know, the missile launching mechanism in the back?
Yeah.
I unscrewed that, and I would fit Star Wars dudes in there, like they were, like, riding inside of them and stuff. I would drag... when I was little, I would drag it behind me, and I wore down the toes of the Jumbo, and all, like, the black lead sand came out of it, and my parents, especially my mother, freaked out because she thought it was like lead, and it might have been, for all I know. I have no idea.
It might have been. I remember that as well.
Yeah,
I cut open the legs of the dragon. I was in a sandbox.
This black sand,
and I broke the blue upper thigh had like split in half or something. And then I just remember like shaking the bottom part of the leg and hearing like the sand pattern just like breaking it open and going, ooh, that might not have been a good idea. My mom was pretty pissed, but...
So, I had that, and eventually I still kept it, but I grew out of it. And I went through, you know, adolescence and all that in high school, and I started hanging out at this comic book store, and they were talking about whatever, and I'm like, oh yeah, I have one of those big old robots, and I brought it out and put it in the window, and it stayed in their front window for a long time, all beat up and beat to hell and everything. And then they lost it.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone. It never showed up again. So this was around, eventually around 97.
Pivotal year for many.
Yeah.
Our age.
Someone told me about this cool website where, hey, if I was you know where I was? I was out looking at comic stores and I stopped by Wex Rex Collectibles in Framingham. And it's the guy that's on Antiques Roadshow, Gary Summers.
I used to know that guy. Yeah.
And I'm he had like all kinds of other dumb shit and whatever. And I asked him, hey, do you have one of these Shogun Warriors? He's like, oh no, I had them, but I don't have any more pieces. But do you know where you may want to try? There's a site called eBay. I'm like, oh. And the rest is all downhill.
Little did dealers know at the time that would be the demise of like the physical experience of going into a store.
And what's funny is that so much weird crap surrounded this first thing because I got the account. Yeah. I found one online, $175. I was dating this girl, and she was going to buy it. She bought it for me, you know? And in between the process of her buying it for me and it arriving, we broke up. So I had to, I said, well, we'd come to an agreement that we'd go halfsies on it. You know, because she did mean to buy it for a gift.
It was nice of her.
You know, yeah, it was really nice. But it took, like, 2 months for it to get to my house.
Hmm.
And you know who I bought it off of?
Who?
Mario. But I didn't know who he was at the time.
Yeah.
But it was this thing that, like, he left it in his girlfriend's trunk, and, like, they broke up or something like that, so he couldn't get it back. So it was this giant... This
weird karma bot.
Yeah, yeah. So eventually it showed up, you know, and finally I just was obsessed with that, like, that resurgence of childhood, like, oh my god, I loved this toy. And just from that point on, I would just grab everything I had my hands on, because it just reminded me of that, you know, that great childhood experience, you know? And I also liked him, too, because he was the one that wasn't in, you know, later on, he wasn't in the TV show.
Right.
You know, like, everybody loved, I mean, everyone loved Guy King, everybody loved Transor Z, you know, everyone loved Grandizer, but I loved this guy that nobody knew who the fuck he was.
Right.
You know? And that was something I identified with, because I was always, like, the fat misfit kid that got beat up and shit. So, like, you know.
But you liked the svelte Egyptian
oh, yes.
pharaoh, you know?
Well, like, I mean, totally, he was just very, amongst all the other robots that came out, he had such a different aesthetic, too, you know?
I see, when I was younger, I liked him, and I do like him, and you're probably going to hate me for saying this, but I thought he was a little femme. Like, he was,
He's got some nice lips. His lips are very pronounced.
Well, see, that's the same reason I didn't like Dan Gardace that much when I was younger, because I don't think I have, aesthetically, I think I was geared more towards the stuff that seemed reminiscent of Japanese aesthetics.
Sure.
And definitely Ray Dean does to a degree. I mean, there's definitely sort of like a samurai warrior, you know, aesthetic there.
Yeah,
but
there's no denying the Egyptian influence. There,
I mean, obviously, you know, and it's the face and it's sort of like the little beard. And
mm-hmm.
I think the humanoid quality of it is what sort of turned me off a little bit. And it took me a while to even like Dangard. And I wanted to like Dangard because everything that Leiji Matsumoto had done, I was a big fan of. Everything from, you know...
See, I didn't have any idea at the time that Matsumoto had anything to do with
Dangard. See, I could tell just by the fact that the character designs were exactly the same. It was,
never mind. Because you weren't older, you were younger than me.
Yeah, I'm a year younger than you. I know. So, I mean, but I'm just saying, like...
I didn't pick up on that at all, because I was, I was hardcore Star Blazers, but, you know? But I didn't even know who Matsumoto was, you know, at that age.
I don't know. I mean, I...
Somehow you got clued into it.
Into it early on for some reason. I'm not really sure why, but, for me, like, you know, obviously you're known for...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, well... You're known for, like, the Ray Dean thing, and I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm sort of like the Guy King freak, but, I mean, my whole thing was, and I've told it before, and you know, take out the violins or whatnot, but, you know, like, it's probably about 79, is when I got heavily into Guy King. I mean, I was collecting the toys before that, but, I mean, it was something that my parents had gone out and purchased before I was really aware of it.
Now, that's an interesting aside. You were, I mean, did you actually consider yourself collecting at that age?
I wasn't collecting. I was collecting probably around the time the Godakins came out.
Yeah.
Probably in, like, the early 80s, like, by around 84, because I was around 10. So, at that point, I remember getting a Sun Vulcan and keeping it in the box and storing it under
the bed. That's such a weird mindset for a 10-year-old to have, you know,
but
like...
I thought about it. I remember writing something about it a while ago, and I remember thinking that when my mom bought me the Nessar when I was in the hospital, when I came down with diabetes when I was like 5, right? So I was in the hospital for a week, and my mom went to the convenience store, or I guess it was some gift shop downstairs in like Children's Hospital, and they had a Macanda Robo ST.
Yep.
Loose, and then they had
loose.
It was so random. But here's the thing, you know, it was 79, so yep. It was probably like, I mean, Mr. Big and Waltham wasn't that far away.
Yeah,
and I remember the commercials at the time, but I remember them having a loose Nessar as well. And she bought the Nessar and brought it up, and I was just like fascinated by it. And I had no fucking idea what it was. I just remember thinking, wow, you know, it's like all these little Japanese characters. I didn't even know it was Japanese. I mean, it was
it
like
had the lettering on the side.
Yeah.
And, you know.
But the colors were great, and it just, I don't know, there's something about Nessar that's just, like, goofy and kind of lovable.
Very,
you know?
Very
he's like
friendly
like a,
to kids,
he's like
yeah.
a little, he's like a little turtle with wings, you know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, and I'm Scottish, so I mean, like, maybe that whole, like, Nessie thing was just sort of, you know, a little connection there, but I just remember afterwards, like, you know, really taking care of that toy, and then something happened to it. But then, like you, it was, like, Force 5, Guy King was on Fridays, I think. And then I just remember, like, you know, being fascinated by that one the most. And I think I was sort of simultaneously scared and fascinated by the space dragon. You know, it was like so massive, and it just, and I remember making
that noise it makes.
But it made the same, like Godzilla, like an old, if you look at old Godzilla films, there's like some of the sound effects that they have actually cross over. And I remember kind of being fascinated by that, like thinking like, all right, what relationship do these two things have?
See, it's interesting to have that kind of awareness, I think.
I was a freaky little kid. Yeah. I was an only child. I like been drawing like since I was able to hold a pencil, and like I didn't have that many playmates. So it was just, we lived in upstate New York, like in Syracuse, and like it was like this apartment complex that was like, it was like something out of The Shining. Like literally, like during the winter, like I think I was skiing before I was like walking. But like during the winter, it was like I had like one friend down the hallway. There was like some other family that my parents were friends with.
Did you get to ride your big wheel inside?
Dude, I had a big wheel, and I actually did get to ride it around, and it was kind of freakish.
That's awesome.
But I just remember like being sort of like a fairly introverted kid, so I'd think about these like weird relationships and correlations between things that seemed unrelated, but I was just immediately hooked by the whole Guy King thing, because there was something about Guy King that almost seemed evil, like his aesthetic. I mean, he's got these massive horns.
Could it be the giant skull in the chest?
Huge skull in the chest.
Could be that.
You know, it's like right. But I mean, like it was. I mean, for me, it was sort of, you know, is this revelation of like, here's this aesthetic that
it was like an anti-hero.
An anti-hero. That's it. Almost had this. I mean. You know, to me, Mazinger is sort of like the Darth Vader of the world. To me, Guy King has almost got this Boba Fett sort of like aesthetic. Like, it's just sort of like this side character that's not quite as popular, but like it has a hardcore following. And I don't know, there's just something about it that really appealed to me. But I remember afterwards, after I got out of the hospital, like probably about a few months later, my parents took me to Mr. Biggs for the first time, and I had probably saved up like whatever allowance that, you know, I had at the time, like for that year, and bought a GA-52 loose. So I got the Space Dragon. It was like $30. I remember that being quite a bit of money at the time, but I had waited a really long time to get it. And for some reason, and like the idea of thinking how far away Waltham really is now, it's, you know, not that far, but you know, when you're a little kid.
This is from when you were on the South Shore?
This was when I was on the South Shore when I was in Hingham. Okay. So, like, you know, it was a good hour or whatever.
Yeah.
But I remember sneaking downstairs at Mr. Biggs at one point, like, and getting yelled at. That was an amazing basement, because that's where they had all the stockpile.
Is that like the peeking behind the curtain?
Well, that was that's like going into to the old antiques and getting to go in the basement. Which I never got to do, but it's another tale. But yeah, man, that was like where the whole stockpile of stuff was, and so we brought the toy home, and I guess I was being a brat for some reason. I don't know what I was doing. I mean, what the hell? I was an only child, and my dad took the toy and chucked it in the woods because he was so pissed that I was being a brat. And I just remember like being so upset because I had waited so long to get this toy. So I went out. And he threw it, like, somewhere that was basically, like, had a lot of, like, thorns and brambles and shit. And I was just, like, had, like, little cuts all over me. But I got that damn toy out of the woods. And then a week later, not even a week later, I had it on the couch at my grandmother's. And she didn't see where she was sitting. She sat on it and broke off the red fin on the side.
Right.
And I remember trying to glue it back on, and it was, the thing just looked busted. You know, it was just like, it had been through a war. And I think somehow psychologically from that point on, I wanted to somehow like protect these little toys, you know, like I was just like bummed out that like,
the two
ones that I had like, you know, the one that I got in the hospital I had lost, and then the one that I had saved all my money for had gotten destroyed in a matter of like a week. And so like I just, at that point on, I just decided like I'm gonna
you're not gonna let these get ruined,
not let
anymore.
Them get ruined. And I, you know, the funny thing is I always wanted, when I was a kid, but I never had a GA-51. Like I never had a Guy King 2-in-1. My mom like either couldn't afford it or couldn't find it. It was It was a weird thing, but I remember always wanting one.
Yeah, I never had one either.
I had a friend who had one.
I never had a Radeen 2-in-1.
I mean, maybe
it might have just been hard to find.
It might have been, but it's just sort of funny now that I have this weird obsession. I've got like, you know, way too many.
I think obsession is kind of lightly. I don't know if there's a more intense word than obsession.
I don't know.
How many GA51s do you have?
I don't know if I should admit this in public. Currently 16.
16. All of them different, though.
The funny thing is, well, actually, two of them are not. Two of them are the Shogun version, which I dub the fifth version. There's technically five versions of the toy, and then beyond that, there's actually differences in small differences, like the production runs might have been short, so they kept on interchanging parts. So there'd be like little things like the stickers on the arms might actually be shiny versus matte. The screws that they used might have been different. The, you know, the shade of color that they used on the face grill, sometimes they alternate between white and silver. I mean, there's little things that they do that, unless you're probably a little nuts, you wouldn't notice. Mm. So it's like, I guess I just had decided, well, nobody really sat down and sort of like figured out just how many of these variations they made. Right. So far, you know, there's a couple that I still don't have that I do want to get. And oddly enough, I don't have a number 2 version, which is the small shoulder with the first time they use the pale blue legs as opposed to the dark blue legs in the first version. For some reason, that was the smallest production run.
How do you feel about the moniker or the air that has been brought around you in a sense about, you know, Mr. C10?
Well, and, you know, man,
you know, everyone associates you with these, you know, crisp clear boxes and things like that.
Well, I mean, it's partly my own fault because I was enough of a nerd about sort of being obsessed about box condition and letting everybody know that I was obsessed about box condition. But I mean, at the same time, I think, you know, most of my friends are the ones that run the sites, so it's like you guys have all been kind enough to sort of like make it a point to be like, oh, he's the box obsessed one. So I mean, it's hype, you know what I mean? But at the same time, it's kind of fun. I mean, I don't want to be over identified with it because I feel like I have a relatively normal existence. I mean, I'm not like the 40-year-old virgin sitting at home playing with my toys.
But it's funny though that it's that. Your kind of fanaticism about box condition does flow over to other parts of your life. Because I remember one of and you're probably going to know what I'm talking about, one of the funniest early memories I have of you is when we went out and we went to Walmart or something, and we got my daughter a Barbie doll, and she asked you to open it. And so if you know Barbie dolls, I mean, it's essentially, you know, you get your box, and there's a piece of tape holding the flap, and inside there's a tray, and there's twist ties that hold the Barbie to the tray. And we handed it to him, and he's trying to open the box without damaging the tape. You know, and I'm like, dude, just open it. It's a Barbie doll. And he's like, nope. He's just like slowly peeling the tape off, and he's untwisting each of the twist ties, and my kid's going mental, like, just give me the toy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's... there are two types of people in terms of... There are collectors and there are people who don't collect. Yeah. And I think I've come from two parents that sort of... More my father. You know, I grew up him basically doing a lot of antique dealing and stuff like that. And I grew up, like, in other areas of expertise in terms of antiques and books. I love antiquarian books and stuff like that. And condition always played a big role in book collecting. And I think I've always just sort of been preoccupied with sort of like not only the aesthetic of something, but just sort of how the condition affects that aesthetic. And so to me, it's like, you know, I'm a caretaker of these things. It's all transitory. It's more so with things that are even older. I mean, like, I collect Japanese swords. So, I mean, yeah, that sounds really, you know, sort of Napoleon Dynamite. I've got a sword. It's really great. But, you know, there are these things that sort of have existed previous to us, and they've lasted this far. I don't want to be the person to fuck it up. So, like, I generally go out of my way to sort of create environment for these objects that they're allowed to sort of, you know, be appreciated, but at the same time, they're safe from harm. And, and I mean, it's a little weird, and it's not like I'm not unaware of sort of, like, the how somebody could look at it and just go, well, that's, you know, you seem a little preoccupied with condition, but I mean, it's just from growing up with a lot of antiques and sort of appreciating sort of like how something can last and wanting to be a caretaker for it.
So, does it like wig you out a little bit to like come over like here and see like tattered boxes and things with stickers applied?
No, not at all. I mean, to be completely honest, it's like I come here and it's freeing, you know, like you guys can't see us, but I'm literally sitting in this little chair on the floor and we're just, you know, drinking. And I mean, Josh has got a room full of toys, way more than I have at home. And it's cool because I actually can come over here and feel like I can actually play with stuff.
Yeah, you know, you can pick up like anything.
There's that side of it. I mean, I definitely don't want to give the impression that I don't enjoy the toys for what they are and that somehow I hoard them. And and put them away and never look at them. I mean, I have everything on display and I take them out and I look at them and I appreciate them, but I think I look at them as like little art objects as opposed to necessarily things that I would play with. I mean, you know, but at the same time, I sometimes wish I was more like you in the respect that you definitely have kind of a freedom about your collecting that's less stressful. You know, like I can definitely see the benefit of sort of, you know, not worrying about how good a box is. You know,
right,
it's like,
right.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, we're both visual designers. Well. And for me, the box sometimes is like half of the enjoyment because I look at the graphic, I look at sort of like the aesthetic of the illustration, and my background is illustration.
I can definitely, I love a good box. I do get jazzed when I get a good box, but for me, kind of sometimes accepting a lower box quality or even an incomplete box allows me to experience a toy that I think would otherwise maybe be out of my reach collecting-wise, you know? And I also, but that's also because it lets me not feel bad about playing with the toy.
Yeah.
Because I'm not kind of like, you know, breaking open the tomb, so to speak. You know, it's been played with, it's been used as a toy. It's and why not? You know, it's meant to be a toy. Let's continue to play with it.
Well,
you know?
What I think is great about that is that in a sense, the toy has sort of like, and it's going to sound kind of, I'm not trying to be new agey or any bullshit like that, but this, you know, it has sort of like the soul already in it from sort of its previous playtime with the kid who had it.
Oh, yeah, I got vinyls, you know, like, with the names written on the bottom, and I love that.
How fascinating is that to think about, you know, some little Japanese kid back in the 70s or 80s playing with this thing, and totally, you know, these little icons, these little sort of, like, you know, I mean, and they are. I mean, they're, you know, these are, like, little totems, you know, these little...
And then you get into the modern toys, which kind of don't have that and are more collectors' things that are throwbacks to to characters and designs we like. Not so much meant for play, but...
But it's weird. It's like...
So they each tug at different parts of your...
Well, one is definitely a nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a sentimentality to it. There's an emotional connection.
It's something cool about seeing a properly proportioned Getter One that clicks and moves and shoots stuff and, you know, it's modern engineered, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
but it does suck that an actual kid is not gonna really get to play with that because it costs $100.
Yeah,
for 6 inches of die cast. I can appreciate the art. I can appreciate the engineering, the artisanship, but I kind of wish the toys were at a place where, you know. That's why I have a shelf full of Transformers here, because the same amount of engineering goes into them. It's the equivalent of what they were buying then.
Well, that's the thing is, for me, and this is ultimately what it comes down to for my collecting, is I don't collect modern stuff, not because I don't appreciate it. I definitely do. I think the SOCs and I think all that has been really great. I think it allows people who are are into that sort of stuff, but not necessarily desiring to you know, want to spend, you know, lots and lots of money on something that, you know, may not have the playability anymore because it's, you know, 30 years old. But I definitely like the sort of primitiveness and the sort of simplicity and sort of the innocence that's innate in something that was actually built for a child.
I agree.
I think, like, something is lost, something, you know, it's almost this, when it's created for a collector adult market, it almost has this sort of jaded quality that it loses its initial purpose.